Is your business plan very unclear and you're tirelessly working at a low-paying career? Let's help you get out of the rut and let go of the fear. It's time to excel into the million-dollar stratosphere. Now, here's your host of The Balanced Millionaire, who will take you there, Eileen Mendel.
This is Eileen Mendel speaking, and I'm your host of today's show. And we've got a very good show lined up for you with our two guests talking about communication in business and communication in your personal life as well. And today's guest, first guest, I'm very excited to introduce her. Her name is Dr. Janet Sawyer. And she runs a firm called J.J. Sawyer Consulting. For some of us, there's nothing more about exciting about learning who we are. And when people know how to effectively communicate and build rapport, that self-awareness drives success. So Dr. Sawyer, she's an experienced educator, leadership expert, personality style specialist, and professional presenter. People think about themselves and others by introducing. She helps them introduce themselves with innovative, effective, and life-changing behavioral styles so that people can better empower themselves, be better communicators, and prevent conflicts and positively influence those around them. Dr. Jan Sawyer is a lifelong learner and an educational professional. She has served as a leadership consultant for a nationally recognized education research company. She was an adjunct professor for leadership for two universities, a middle school principal, in which she was awarded Principal of the Year for the state of Colorado, and an elementary and middle school teacher. Her first passion is teaching others how to communicate, and she is an expert in the DISC system. Welcome, Dr. Sawyer, to today's show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And it's a very important topic to know how to communicate with your peers. And, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of tension because of lack of understanding between two people because they have learned a particular way of speaking and communicating that is not conducive to, you know, a good, you know, working relationship, or there's always misunderstanding in communication. So can you clarify the different personality types and what can one do to communicate with each other in a more effective way?
Well, you know, the personality types that I work with, it's called the DISC assessment. D-I-S-C. And what I love about this, it's a universal language of behavior. There's no, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, green, blue, rich, or poor. You're all four of those styles. You all have D, I, S, and C in you. And kind of knowing that makes it easier to start to understand personalities. It's also very observable behavior. So you can see it. You can walk in a room and actually see the major personality style that's standing right in front of you. And once you know what your style is, you'll know how to shift so that you can communicate more effectively with that person. And so, you know, there's that DISC, and it stands for dominant, interactive, supportive, and conscientious. So when I'm working with people, because of that teaching background that you read about and my time in education, people don't remember DISC. So what we did is we put birds, B-I-R-D-S, because everybody remembers a parrot and everybody remembers an eagle and a dove and an owl. So we do it in a unique way so people can actually understand how do they communicate so they can communicate more effectively with the people that they come in contact with.
Now, can I just ask you, you mentioned when you walk into a room, mm-hmm. you can tell which of these personality types, the parrot, eagle, dove, or owl, to approach each person with in a room. How is that? How is it? What do you look for?
Well, you know, like, have you ever been in a room where you see someone very colorful and they're bouncing around talking to all these different people? They're laughing. They're having a great time.
Yes. Well,
that gives you a clue that they are parrots. The high eye.
So they're very social and they're like wanting to get approval, let's say, and feel good with all the people in the room. That's a parrot.
That's a parrot. And that's the eye and disc. They're influential. They have imagination. They're intuitive and inspirational. If you want to know anything, you just go find a parrot and they'll be able to tell you. If they don't know, they'll be able to tell you who knows. So they're very important people because they get around and they talk to people and find out about people. They like to learn about people. And so they're a very important person to know. So then when you walk into a room and you see someone that's very quiet and reserved and they're sitting by themselves, and when you come up to speak to them, they're very shy. Those are your high S's. Those are your doves. You know, doves love to, they're very sincere, they're selfish, they're sympathetic, they like everybody to be kind of happy and harmonious, but they're not real loud and they're very shy. You almost have to, a parrot needs to pull a dove into the conversation, or doves will just sit and listen and observe. So when you can start to look at that, if you see somebody that's asking you a lot of questions, like who, what, when, where, how'd that happen? You know, you're talking to an owl, which is your C. And so then you know how to start to have a conversation with them. But then when you see the eagle, that eagle's very direct. They might stand at you and say, how are you doing? And walk away at the same time before they finish the sentence. You know you're talking to an eagle. So just knowing that, you start to change your behavior.
So how would you, can you go through each category when you're confronted with a parrot? How do you communicate with a parrot?
Well, I'll start with this. One day I moved to a new community and I saw this couple and I was so excited to be here. And they said, how are you? And I just went, oh, I love it here. I got so excited. Da, da, da. And the husband just took a step back and he went, whoa, you got a big personality. I knew I was talking to an eagle. So when you talk to an eagle, I can't be parroting. That was a parrot that was talking to him. I have to say, how are you doing? Isn't it a great day? And be very to the point. Then if I'm talking to a dove, I'm talking from my parrot side of view or anybody. When you're talking to a dove, it's really important to talk about, you know what? You look really nice today. How is your family? You have to create a relationship before you can start to go into a business kind of conversation with a dove. And that dove is the S in disc.
So you're basically pulling them out of their shyness to open up to you.
You're meeting them at where they are.
Where they're comfortable.
And then you pull them to where you want them to go.
Okay.
So like if you're going up to an eagle or D as in dominant, you better be clear, specific, and to the point. Whereas you, so a sample of a question you might say or a statement you might say is, within just a few minutes, you can have your own personalized report. So if I was talking to an eagle and I was talking about taking the DISC assessment, it would be very important for me to be very clear and specific and then just say right away, with just a few minutes, you can have your own personalized report. Whereas when I'm talking to an I, which is a parent, I need to allow time for relating and socializing. I better be able to stand there and let that parent tell me a story and be real kind of patient with that. And then go into telling them about this assessment and how colorful it is, because they like color. And it only takes 10 to 15 minutes. They like that. It goes fast. If you're talking to a dub, you're going to talk about, you know, this kind of assessment really helps with relationships and people getting along better, because that's what they want. The doves like to be able to get along better. And then your C is you're going to say, you know, this assessment takes 10 to 15 minutes. You will get your report once you hit submit. You'll be able to read exactly about how you are, and you have to be very blank and to the point with the owls. So if you know this, whether you're a networking system or networking group, you'll start to identify how people are looking, whether they're looking shy, you'll know to go up and be very calm. Go ahead.
I was gonna ask you, in business, okay, you have the business management, mm-hmm. which I would think would be eagles mostly, and I would think that the people in perhaps in marketing could be more parrots, and the people who just want to keep their head low and do the work, you know, which is lower management, or the employees could be possibly doves, mm-hmm. and then the owl would be more like your computer programmers or people who want all the instructions, like give me all the instructions of what I need to do and I'll follow them to the T.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I was going to ask you, so it's interesting how we have these four personalities. Is this something that we're born with, or is this something that's learned behavior?
Well, you have two styles. You have a natural style. And you can see the natural style in children. You can see it as young as kindergarten. You can see it. You can see it at 2 or 3 years old. You can kind of see the natural style of a child. And then you learn how to adapt your style. So, yeah, you might be in a family that's your style is one way, but your father has been teaching you to get out there and talk to people and all that. And you've learned how to do that, but you've learned it through adapting your natural style. So that's why it's important to know what your natural style is, so that you can really be more mindful about what type of jobs you get yourself into. Because when you work outside of your natural style, you can do it. And you can do it for a year. You can do it for 3 years. But eventually, this is what you hear. And you can always tell when people are working outside their natural style. And that is, you'll hear this. I can't wait till it's Friday. Oh, my gosh, it's only noon. You know, I just hate this job. I'm going to keep this job for 5 more years, and then I've just got to go. That's when you know someone's working totally outside of their natural style. So when you start to understand who you are naturally, you can pick and choose how long you want to be adapted. You know, so like an example, I was working with this one client, right. And I was doing more owl work. Well, I'm a high I, which is a parrot, and a high D, which is dominant. And I had to adapt myself to a S, dove, and an owl in order to work with this person. Yes. So I could do that successfully for about 6 months. But after 6 months, what do you think is going to happen? Because I'm too far away from my natural style, I'm going to be unhappy.
Right. It won't be a good match as far as a client.
Exactly.
It's you're actually pushing yourself to be something and do and communicate in a way you're not used to, and you're forcing yourself to do it.
And you can do that for a certain amount of time, but being aware that that's what you're doing is what's really exciting, because now you're in the driver's seat. You know what kind of job is going to make you happier, as long as it's closest to your natural style. We all have to adapt, but it's how long. You know, some people have adapted their style at work for 20 years, and they're miserable. Haven't you ever met any people like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes you meet people who go into a career like lawyers or doctors, and they're not suited. They don't either have, you know, in the case of lawyers, they just don't want to be the, you know, the eagle or whatever they're expected to be.
That
or
owl.
Doctors or owl. And then the people who are doctors and change careers, they don't have it, you know, empathetic personality or nurturing personality that will, you know, make them happy. And they end up switching careers.
Exactly. So can you imagine what we did is we our assessment goes all the way down to 13-year-olds. Because can you imagine a parent that has a middle school kid, and I talk from experience as a middle school principal, that's the first part where they say, oh, my child's not listening to me, or they're not talking to me. Well, once a parent start understanding their style, they'll start to be able to relate with their child's style, and that's when the communication will start to open up again.
Do you think that a lot of parents assume that genetically their children are going to have a similar thought process and patient? Is that an old way of thinking, or has
no? I think they think like that all the time. Haven't you heard a parent say, "Well, you know, Johnny." You know, Johnny, when he gets home from school, he comes and he hugs me and he tells me all about his day. Okay, that's a parent. But my other daughter, she just comes in, she says hi, and she goes straight to her room. She must not love me like my son loves me. No, she's an eagle. She's an eagle. She doesn't want it. She doesn't engage like that. You know, so just working with parents on understanding that has nothing to do with whether they love you. Your daughter's an eagle and your son is a parrot. And so parrots are going to come in and hug and love on you and tell you their whole day. Eagles don't have time for all that. So I used to work with parents on understanding how to have a conversation with their eagle child and still be able to have that connection. But it's not going to look the same.
Now, you said you could start recognizing these things at 13. What about even younger than that? Can you still see some of those personality traits coming through?
You can see it, I think, from the time they are babies, just by watching. You can actually see it. You can see it. If you walk into a kindergarten classroom, you can tell the parrots, the doves, the eagles, and the owls right away. I'm sure it happened once the child started to be able to verbalize and communicate, I'm sure. You know, I bet you babies that were active and parents say, God, I wish my baby would just calm down. That's probably a parrot.
Well, I remember an incident that happened a long time ago in my own early years in elementary school where I was playing ball with some other children. But I noticed that we weren't keeping the rules of the game, and I spoke out. And then my female, I think it was first grade teacher, wrote something in my records, which still probably remains there, that I did not get along with other people. But I was trying, my natural style was to take on more, I guess, of a leadership role, would you say, during those early years.
You got called out because you were trying to tell somebody about the rules. So your owlness came out, and because owls are really about, being compliant, making sure you follow those steps, those rules. So your owl was speaking, and then probably you didn't get along with kids because the parents, you know, they don't care about rules. They just want to play. And so that probably what made that teacher write that. But when you're a rule follower like that and you want everybody to follow the rules, it's usually an owl behavior. That those owls are conscientious to see. They're the ones that you want to have around because they know details. They know exactly what to follow, how to follow it, what to do. First step, second step, third step.
I remember just feeling like, you know, I just want to play the game fairly so that my team, you know, we got our points, you know, in a fair way, and the other team got their points in a fair way, and there was no cheating. And I guess, you know, and the teacher didn't like me clarifying the rules. And she wrote and said, I don't get along with other students.
Now that you know this, what do you think the teacher was?
The teacher was judgmental. So I'm not sure what would that be.
Well, let's try to use a different word than judgmental.
Let's see. Well, she wasn't a dove. That's for sure.
Or probably dominant.
What's that?
Dominant, the D?
Yes, eagle? I'm thinking she was an eagle. Like she felt like she was in charge.
That's right.
And the way that kids should play was going to be a certain way, and if I spoke out, that wasn't what she would like to see in the play. Yeah, during the play period.
Exactly, because one of the traits, see, taking charge. The eagle's like to take charge. And you were being an owl, and so that means you're questioning and taking over the taking charge.
I see.
Yeah.
So that clashed with her role as the teacher.
As the eagle. That's right. Eagle. Because if she would have been a dove, teacher, she probably would have said, okay, now we need to listen. We need to listen to Eileen because she's right. You know, we all want to be fair and we all want to make sure that everybody has a chance, but we have to do it in a fair way. So Eileen, thank you very much. That would have been a dove teacher.
Well, what would you say is the best style? Let's say an eagle were to confront an eagle. How do they communicate with each other because they both want to dominate the scene?
So you're asking me what now?
Okay, an eagle.
And an eagle.
A very, you know, determined, defined, decisive person confronts another eagle who also is very determined and decisive and has different opinions. And they kind of butt heads. What's the best way? I mean, because, you know, if they can't agree on something, let's say, you know, they have a little bit different opinion about, let's say, their partners or in a firm or colleagues, how do they communicate with each other to get something done? Because I would feel that things would get a bit stuck.
Well, you know, an eagle to an eagle. Well, number one, first of all, know who you are, because if you are an eagle and you're getting ready to confront an eagle, then you better take a step back. It depends on what you're doing. So if I'm going to go to another eagle, but that eagle has something I need, then guess what? I'm going to back off. And I'm going to talk to them, at least be having more facts. I'm going to have more figures. I'm going to let them talk about what they see. And I'm going to shift my behavior, because two eagles together will fight and fight and fight and never get anything done.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, but because guess what?
It's just like a standstill where, you know, one has to be right over the other.
Yeah, well, they like to win-win. So a real eagle, remember now, we all have all four birds here. All of us have four birds in ourselves, okay? They all live within us. We have a primary one that we tend to go after first, but we all have all four. And so I would tap, if I'm dealing with an eagle and I want business, like I'm an eagle as well. One of my primary birds is eagle. And I was working with a superintendent, a CEO rather, of a company. And I had to work with him on a project. Now, when I went into his office, I did not walk into his office as a confronted type eagle. What I did is I sat down first and said, how are we going to work together? So that way we don't clash. So sometimes you have to just put it out on the table like that.
So be open, I mean, with the realization, you know, you're working with somebody who also has that same kind of personality. Mm-hmm. So asking the question, you know, to the other person, what is the best way so we can come to terms so that we can move forward on the project?
Exactly.
Or it is a decision.
Exactly. And you have to be organized. I mean, you're not going to be able to talk because they like you to get to the point. So you have to be very clear, specific, and to the point. And most of the time, eagles, they like to fight anyway, and they don't take it personally.
So they can walk away from something, even if they haven't won completely, and they have to compromise and not take it with them emotionally.
Oh, no. They're not emotional beings. They're task-oriented. So what they might walk away with is if they didn't feel they won. So if you're a real keen eagle and you know you're working with the eagle, then you know you're going to have to figure out how to make that other person feel like he's won.
That's very good advice. So we're running out of time here on this segment. What would you like to leave with the listeners who are in businesses? They have colleagues that have those, some of the different styles, and they need to feel more comfortable, or like you said, you know, if it doesn't feel right, they're going to have to leave the job. So what kind of advice would you give to listeners out there?
Well, you know, before, you know, the thing that I would say is get to know who you are. Take time to invest in yourself and learn who you are. A lot of people don't do that. Most people find all fault with everything else, but they don't stop and learn about you and how you operate so that you can be more intentional about how you can shift and be more mindful about you and how you work throughout the people that you're working with. It starts with you. It starts with self first. So that's where I would tell them is go be, find out about who you are. Take the DISC assessment. You know, and it takes 10 to 15 minutes. And then you have a report. You can read about yourself. And it's so accurate. It's kind of scary. And then you'll know exactly what to do. You know, there's a DISC assessment for sales. And it will teach you how to talk to the different styles so that you can actually make the sale. So I would definitely do that. DiscoveringMe.net. DiscoveringMe.net. If you go to that website, you can go right straight to it and take a Discovering Me assessment, and you can find out within 10 to 15 minutes exactly who you are and how you fly. And then that way you'll start to understand even more about what I've been talking about this evening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sawyer, for being on our show tonight. It's been really interesting and a lot of valuable information. And if you want to contact Dr. Sawyer, it's at discoveringme.net. We'll go break now, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Eileen.
You're welcome.
My business has lost its upward momentum. I'm working up to 14 hours a day, but my sales seem to have plateaued. I'm so overwhelmed.
I used to have that same problem, but ever since I found the Balanced Millionaire Consulting Firm, our sales and profits have risen sharply. Even our staff is more engaged, and the atmosphere is full of energy.
I have no time to work on my business to develop new sales and marketing strategies. I would love to expand, have strategic partnerships, and access to financing.
You can do all of that and more. The Balanced Millionaire Consulting Team advises you on streamlining your operations, establishing alliances, and most importantly, increasing your revenues and profits.
Let us help you build value and reduce stress in your business. Take charge. Don't let your business control your life. Visit thebalancedmillionaire.com or call 442-224-0160 for a free consultation. That's 442-224-0160 or thebalancedmillionaire.com.
Hello, everyone. We're back from our break. This is Eileen Mendel, host of The Balanced Millionaire. And we're continuing our conversation with our next guest, Paula Shaw, regarding communication. Let me tell you a little bit about Paula's background. She is a life transition therapist and grief specialist. She also is a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and a media host on Change It Up Radio. For more than 20 years, Paula has been passionate about empowering people who are dealing with profound loss to help them turn their pain into possibility. She uses mind-body tools and techniques to help people ease and eliminate stress, depression, anxiety, and the conditions they precipitate, like weight gain, relationship distress, lack of energy, and apathy. She also helps clients who are going through major life transitions or seeking freedom from self-destructive addictions. She has degrees in education and communications from Long Beach State University, as well as graduate counseling credentials in grief and addictive disorders from Loyola Marymount University. She is one of the founding members of the Association of Comprehensive Energy Psychology and currently serves on its board of directors. Paula is the author of several books, Chakras, The Magnificent Seven, Grief, When Will This Pain Ever End? And her newly launched book, Saying the Right Thing When You Don't Know What to Say. Welcome, Paula, to our show today.
Thank you, Eileen. And my goodness, that bio was probably longer than my interview is going to be. I'm going to have to work on shortening that.
Quite a few credentials. And you have many years of experience, more than 20 years of experience with communications, empowering people, helping people to change the way they communicate with each other. So talk to me a little bit about, I'd like to explore the relationship that communication has with the men and women and how they interact with each other. And that could be whether, I know there's a difference, whether they're a colleague, they're the boss, they're the employees, or whether it's a close relationship like spouse, children, or friends. So how do each of those forms of communication differ between men and women, and how can we understand each other better in communication?
Well, that's a great question. And what we have to remember is there is certainly a difference in how the different genders communicate. But as Dr. Sawyer was explaining earlier, there's also not only do we have men and women, but within those groups, we have the four different types that Dr. Sawyer talked about. So it gets even more complicated because, you know, like if you're a really assertive type person, or you're a guy who's just like cut to the chase, you know, just give me the facts. And he's talking to somebody who likes to go into the details and likes to tell the story, that communication can have some real jeopardy attached to it. In fact, I was married to one of those guys who was just cut to the chase, Paula, just cut to the chase. And I liked detail. So sometimes, you know, he was just biting his lip because he was OD'd on the detail I was giving him. And other times I would be so offended and hurt that he didn't want to hear all this detail. And when he'd say cut to the chase, that would really like cut to my heart. And so communication is about, you know, certain things. One of them is the words that you say. And certainly men and women tend to pick those words differently. But the other thing is really the style of person you are and the style of communication that feels natural and comfortable to you. And in my work, oftentimes we're looking at communicating with somebody who's going through a difficult time. You know, as a life transitions therapist, I'm always working with people who are going through some kind of change. And sometimes it's a good change. You know, maybe they retired or they bought a new house and they moved. And sometimes it's a change that causes major upheaval that was thrust upon them, like a death or a divorce or a negative health diagnosis. So when people are in that kind of a situation, communication becomes even more tricky because they're in pain. They're emotional. They're not really thinking with their logical left brain. They are
you know, into what they're feeling. And they may be feeling, you know, a variety of things. Sometimes change can make us feel scared. Sometimes it can make us feel angry or frustrated or, you know, like just totally baffled and bewildered. So when you're looking at the differences in how men and women handle those things, I would say the big piece is women tend to be, obviously not every single one, but on the whole, women have a larger right brain. So that means we think more creatively, more big picture, more emotionally. And men have an expanded left brain. And that is the logical problem-solving part of the brain. So for the most part, even though certainly there are men who love detail and love to, you know, a more emotional kind of conversation, many of them are more of that, you know, the old detective show, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. They're more comfortable with that sort of communication. So people can get hurt. You know, we need to learn about each other so we can communicate with each other in a way that can be heard and in a way that doesn't create any kind of negative emotions.
Now, you just said that the women have a larger right brain, men have a larger left brain. Is that the physical?
Biologically, that's true. Yep. And the women, we have a larger corpus callosum, which is the part that connects the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. So that's why we tend to be able to multitask. We can go big picture more easily. So, yeah, there are some actual physiological differences.
Which is very interesting because I know a lot of this has not come to light until more recently with all the research on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, I'm just going to summarize. So women and men differ in the words, the style, even the circumstances that are going on at the time can also dictate how we respond and communicate with each other. So in the business workplace, I mean, we try to be polite and, you know, understanding of each other. What is the best way when things are like, you know, in havoc or there's issues going on in the business? What is the style that is most effective between men and women to ease the tension? Let's say the woman is the boss and she's got men, male colleagues, as well as employees. What is the right style to work, you know, in those circumstances?
Well, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that question, Eileen. But one thing I can tell you is that when women are in a difficult situation or, you know, the panic button is being pushed, one of the best things for us is to be able to talk and process, to be able to say what we're feeling or what we're worried about or that kind of thing. Now, unfortunately for men, when things get crazy, they tend to want to go within. You know, they want to go in their mental, emotional cave, get quiet, and try to figure out a solution. So you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, there's two different ways of dealing with chaos and stress.
Right. And so men are going to want quiet. So, because remember, they're single focused. So they only really focus well on one thing at a time. So one of the worst things that can happen is when there's a problem to be solved, if the woman keeps chatting or keeps coming up with some other ideas or asking him more and more questions. Probably one of the wisest things a woman can do is, you know, really just be quiet and get the feel of the room. And then maybe if a man's really focusing on solving the problem, then I would lead with saying something like, may I ask you a question? Or are you really focused on that? And shall I wait to ask my question? So give him a chance to let you know what he needs. Because he may be fine with saying, no, go ahead and ask your question. Or it may be, yeah, give me a minute. And if you don't respect that, now you're creating stress because you're asking him to focus on two things at the same time. And men don't naturally do that well. They are single focused. And that's why, you know, in ancient times, they were the hunters. They were the ones who could be totally silent, who could focus in on their prey and very quietly aim and shoot and bring home food for their families. But women, remember, we were talking to other women. We were out foraging for edible plants. We were watching the children. We were cooking the dinner. We had multiple things going on. So we developed what's called the diffuse focus. We can focus on more than one thing at a time. But it's not so easy for the guys because their hard wiring was more about being internal and being focused and producing a result. And women are not hardwired the same way.
So in relationships too, I mean, you could extend, you know, anything you're saying to relationships, whether it's family or friends, mm-hmm. the same thing is true. This is, you know, in a business setting.
Absolutely.
You have to be patient as a woman and ask when the male partner or your spouse is ready to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Ask, you know, what's on your mind? Where do we start? You know, so make him feel comfortable with focusing in on just one thing at a time.
Exactly. And I encourage women. In fact, I was just talking about this on my radio show this morning. I encourage women to kind of make an appointment with a man. You know, too often what we tend to do is we emote or we burst forward with our words because they're emotionally charged. And a man might be right in the middle of the best football game he's ever seen, or in a really important moment in his book, or the report he's putting together, or the book, you know, the paper that he's writing. And for somebody to intrude on that concentration is the worst possible thing that can happen. And trust me, ladies, we do not get a good result when we just burst in on him. So I highly recommend, women, that you say, hey, are you available to talk for a few minutes? Or would this be a good time for us to chat about such and such? Give him the choice. And if he says no, don't pout about it. Just say, okay, what would be a better time? So you want to get your time nailed down. You want to have the talk that you need to have, but you may not be able to do it in that exact moment and have good results.
That is very good advice. And a lot of women need to take note of that. It also takes some conditioning or training to hold yourself back. As women, you want to burst out and express yourself just like you would do to your girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
and to women, but you have to treat the situation differently as women with men, and mm-hmm. and hold your enthusiasm and, you know, just make sure the timing is right. So it does take practice. It does take conditioning. Is that something that you also teach in your practice?
Yes, I do. And also, you know, like on my radio show, we answer emails during the show. And and it's funny because oftentimes, you know, a lot of them come from women and they're often asking questions about how to handle a certain situation with men. Because we either come from one extreme or the other, I think, as women. We're either being almost subservient and bowing to them and letting them run the conversation or run the room, or we're being overly emotive and maybe talking too much rather than just getting to the point, or we might think we have to do it their way, and we try to come across as very tough and very strong and you know, let's just cut to it, no goofing around kind of an attitude. And I think the most important thing for a woman is to be authentic. Whatever type of person she is, whether she is that nurturing dove or that chatty parrot or the detail-oriented owl or the leader eagle, no matter which type she is, she's going to have to work on her communication in different situations. Because how do we relate to three other types unless we can learn how to talk to them in ways they can receive and understand? But what we too often do is talk to everybody from who we are. So, you know, and I have this happen oftentimes in sessions, you know, where I'll get a client who's a chatty parrot, and they just want to chat about all these different things. So then it's my job to try to pull them in, to keep them focused, to try and move them a little more into their owl so they can get to what's really bothering them and what do we need to work on. But if I'm working with a client who's a nurturing dove, and if I come on too strong and too commanding and eagle-like, that probably isn't going to create a very good bond with that client, because she's going to feel like I ran her over and I'm too tough and scary. Now she can't hear and can't interact with me as effectively. So you see, this kind of thing is going on all the time in our everyday relationships, whether it's family, friends, workplace, whatever. We're always engaging in those dynamics.
So basically, are you advocating test the waters out, don't move so quickly into one type of, the bird type of personality or whatever. Don't assume, test the waters out, find out who you're dealing with, speak in a manner that's going to be more understood by that personality, rather than coming from your own personality, talking their language and their way of understanding things. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. It's like there was an old line, get the feel of the room, you know? So try and minimize your communication until you really do have a good sense of who you're dealing with, where they are emotionally, and what is the circumstance in front of you. Is there a problem to be solved? Is there an emotion to be paid attention to or subdued? You know, what's going on in the room? If you're going to be appropriate in your response, you need to know that.
So in a one-on-one situation, it might be easier to assess what is happening, the dynamic, by just paying attention, listening, paying attention if you're face-to-face with the person, the reaction they're having to what you're saying, and change what you're saying or how you're saying it based on observation, rather than being in your head what you're going to say next. Observe and watch how the other person's reacting and slow it down so you can understand who they are and where they're coming from.
Absolutely. You pretty much just outlined what I call the five steps of successful supportive communication that I outline in the new book, Saying the Right Thing When You Don't Know What to Say. And those five steps, if I may share them with you,
sure,
are first, set the right intention. Know why you're going into this conversation or into this situation. You know, what is the goal, the outcome that you would like to create? Secondly, be present. It's so important that you're present. That's what we've been talking about. Be able to feel the room, assess what's going on emotionally, intellectually, situationally. Be present. Then the third step is have the right mindset. And I believe the right mindset is go into this conversation without judgment and without the goal of fixing somebody, but go in to be supportive, to be comforting, and to find out what you can do to help. Then the fourth step is probably the most important step, and you also touched on that, Eileen, and that is listen. You know, I often say in a book titled Saying the Right Thing When You Don't Know What to Say, the first thing I say in the book is the most important thing is not what you say, but that you listen. Because when you're listening, you're allowing the other person to process whatever is going on with them, and you're also getting the information you need to assess the situation and assess what would be an appropriate response. And then finally, step five is when it's appropriate to respond, respond from your heart, not your head. Now, sometimes that might not be true if you're in a situation where, you know, it's a work situation and they're really looking to you to solve a problem. But most of the time when you're involved in a difficult conversation, you're having it with another human being who is having some feelings. And if you can't meet them where they are, it's like if someone's crying and the other person's comment is, don't cry, that doesn't help anything. That's not going to change anything. There you are with an emotional situation. Somebody is on an emotional level and the other person is trying to interact with them on an intellectual level. Well, that person is not coming from their head in that moment. They're coming from their heart, so they're not going to hear the intellectual comment. You know, I like to say when people are hurting or people are scared or people are upset, they need your humanity, not your database. So try to make that comment come from your humanity, from what it's like to be a person who's just going through something tough. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to say something profound. You don't have to come up with the wisdom of the ages. Just be a person connecting with another person, having a human experience.
So what are the difficulties that men have? Because a lot of these traits, I could see women coming from their heart because they're more nurturing, listening more carefully. But men, sometimes they hear, but they don't really listen. Mm-hmm. And not to be stereotypical, but also it's hard sometimes for men to get into them, you know, into their heart, into the feeling of reciprocal, you know, or mutual, you know, emotion about a situation.
Sure, because they've got that big, giant left brain that's all about linear thinking and problem solving. So they start listening to us, and then immediately they go off on a little journey of how to solve this problem. They don't really necessarily want to hear all the details or all of the aspects of our emotion. And so they're busy doing what men do, solve problems, come up with solutions, make sure everybody is protected and provided for. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Eileen. It's tough for men. In fact, I'm doing this online class now called Saying the Right Thing When You Don't Know What to Say. And one of my men said in a class last week, he said, well, I have the hardest time when I'm talking to my employees and their job performance is not going well. And so often I expect them to respond in a certain way and they don't. They don't say what I thought they should say or what they're going to say, and it's so hard for me. And I said, well, the first thing you have to remember, if we go back to Dr. Sawyer's language, they are not the same bird you are, probably, and they didn't grow up in the same nest you did, and they weren't raised by the same parents.
Yes.
We all do that, right? We expect other people to respond in the way we think is appropriate. Because if we didn't think it was appropriate and right, we wouldn't be doing it. And that's probably one of the biggest problems with communication. Men, women, everybody out there. We expect that the way we think and that the way we do things is the right way. And we expect other people to do it that way. And when they don't, it can be upsetting. It can be shocking. It can be maddening. you know, there are all sorts of turns that can take. So I think one of the most important things we all have to remember if we're going to be good communicators is acceptance. Accept people as they are. Don't try to change them and don't insist that they change to be okay for you.
Well, that's excellent advice. And I just wanted to mention also, I work with people from outside the U.S. You know, they're from different countries of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Also, their communication and understanding may not be the same as the kind of communication we have here in the U.S. I mean, even when they greet each other, some of foreigners will kiss each other. Men will kiss each other on the cheek, or women will kiss the men on the cheek, whatever. As in business, I mean, there's just so many different patterns, even among cultures, as well as between genders.
Absolutely. That's a huge one. And that can be a real problem, I think, for sure. At least if it were me and I were going to be doing business with people of another country, I'd put some time into doing some homework and seeing, you know, what are the cultural norms there? What's appropriate for those particular people? Because otherwise you might be offended or you might offend somebody else. And we are all different on this planet. And styles are different. You know, I had a friend who was German, and I had a really hard time warming up to her because she was so direct and she would just speak her mind. And at first she was kind of scary to me, to tell you the truth, because that wasn't my style. And so I think we have to be cognizant of that different people have different styles of communicating and different ways that they think are okay and appropriate. And that may not be what you think is okay and appropriate.
Well, thank you very much, Paula. You've given us a lot of good tips on how to communicate with each other and also how important it is to be cognizant and be present of the words and the style and even the circumstances when you're communicating with each other. And I really appreciate your being a guest on this show. I mean, we could even talk, you know, in so many other areas of communication. And it's been wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
And remember, everyone who's listening out there, tune in every other week to The Balanced Millionaire. And if you're interested in a conversation, contact me at info@thebalancedmillionaire.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Balanced Millionaire with your host, Eileen Mendel, CEO of InnerEdge International, business consultant, multimedia marketing expert, renowned speaker and author. Connect with Eileen Mendel, The Balanced Millionaire. Increase your confidence, creativity, balance, awareness, direction, motivation, and catapult your business to the next level and beyond.